And welcome to the Insane Asylum, back once again. The Night of the Living Dreads podcast covers all and anything horror. I am Otis B. Dreads, a little stuffy, but to help pass me tissues throughout this podcast is Mrs. Dreads. How are you, Mrs. Dreads?
Not stuffy.
Okay, you're going to make fun of me this whole time because I'm nasally?
Maybe.
All right, well, that's okay. Got a good one. One that I'm pretty sure that everyone has probably heard of. We're going to talk a serial killer tonight. We had a little article going along the lines because it was going to be kind of a ladies' night here in the insane asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Where we were going to talk a bunch of just really evil women and one main one. But before we get into all that, we got to give out some horror love. That's right. Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook. Check them out. Best damn horror group on Facebook. Misfit Horror Fiend Club. That's right. Very close second. And let's see. My head's, again, a little stuffy, so I'm not really 100% on my game. We have After Dark.
Yep.
They do, again, a lot of watch parties, those kinds of things. Cool group, though. I see them posting, you know, a lot of different things that comes up on my notifications. But, of course, Slaughter on Wayne.
Slaughter on Garth.
I think you did that on purpose because you just think it's the stupidest thing ever. That's what I think. But anyway, we got the zombie boob.
Yeah.
Zombie boob. If for nothing else, you go check them out on Facebook, strictly because they're called zombie boob.
Yeah.
I think so, anyway. And, of course, the one non-whore love that we give out to sweet, sweet Mary Jane. That's right, Cannabis Arcade. Cannabis spelled with a K. So, don't put it in there. They couldn't really do that, I don't think. They'd have got flagged.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger than ish.
Yep.
All right, so we are going to talk about a female serial killer that most everyone, I think, probably knows about. That well, at least follows the serial killer, you know, killing aspect of, I guess, what we call horror. Because we talk a lot about them here in the Insane Asylum. All
right.
Different kinds of serial killers. So, if you're into that kind of thing like we are, and you're intrigued by serial killers, then you've probably heard of one Eileen Carol Warnos.
Yeah.
Okay. And she had actually a few different names. What are some of the other names, you know, that she had there? Because she wasn't born that.
No. She was born Pittman.
And she also didn't die with the same name. Her name at the time of her death was Eileen
Prowley.
Carol Warnos Prowley.
Yeah. Because she was adopted.
Very strange story. And the more that I was telling you earlier, the more that I keep looking into this, the more I'm like, she is very, very interesting. She went
mm-hmm.
batshit crazy towards the end, which is understandable, you know.
I think she was a little batshit crazy.
Even before. let's get a little bit of maybe some background on this batshit crazy Warnos. Tell us a little bit about her parents, Mrs. Dredd. What was that whole childhood thing like?
Well, she was born to Diane Warnos, and she was 14 years old when she had her. And her father is Leo Dell Pittman. He was 16.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
He was incarcerated during her birth and was diagnosed, I'm assuming, while he was incarcerated.
Yeah, probably seeing, you know, therapists and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And they gave him, what was his lucky card drawn?
Schizophrenia.
Okay.
And then he was convicted of sex crimes against children.
Was that while he was in prison, or was that why
he That's why he was in prison.
That's why he was in prison, okay.
Yeah, and then he committed suicide while he was in jail by hanging himself.
I don't know why he's such a, you know, upstanding gentleman. He had so much to live for.
Yeah. Wow, I don't even know where to go.
Know where to go. That's right. So, so this was a little bit before Eileen was even born that all this happened.
Right.
Correct? Yeah.
Yeah, because he was already, like I said, he was in jail when she was born.
Right, right.
And then when she was 4 years old, her mother abandoned her. She also has a brother named Keith, who her mom had taken her and her brother and dropped both of them off at.
At
her parents' house.
Her mom's parents' house, right.
Yeah.
Maternal grandparents.
Yeah, and they adopted her and her brother.
How'd that work out for him? And the very weird, and I got to bring this up because, you know, we were talking about it, you know, going through the notes and everything. And, you know, the grandparents was Lori and Britta Warnos. Now, I was like, well, you know, which one is, you know, what? I mean, but Lori sounds, Britta just sounded like a possible female name as well.
Mm.
But that is not. It is Grandpa Britta. And Grandma Lori. Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're good.
So, how did that all work out for Eileen as far as being with her grandparents and any kind of stability happening here?
Well, her adopted sister, which I'm assuming was her grandparents' actual daughter.
Right.
Said that their grandparents treated them differently, were pretty much mean to them and stuff.
Yeah.
And Eileen had come out and said that her grandfather had was molesting her and physical abuse. And during the physical abuse, he'd make her strip down and stuff. And then when, at age 14, she ended up pregnant.
Wow.
And it said that she got pregnant by... one of her grandfather's friends.
A friend of her grandfather's, yeah.
And she ended up having the baby. It was in a home for unwed mothers.
Right, yeah. And didn't they take the baby?
No, she gave him up for adoption.
Or gave him up immediately.
Yeah, she gave him up for adoption.
She's kind of pretty promiscuous at 14, which I think is, you know, shouldn't probably shock too many people in this day and age.
No, she was promiscuous at 11.
At 11, that was the point I was going to bring up. Yeah, she was, you know, having sex with, you know, school kids, school boys and everything. Her adopted sister that you just mentioned, she stated that, you know, all the kids, all the boys, you know, around at that time knew that they could get into her pants.
Mm-hmm.
That there was no big shock. You know, she was doing all these things. And she realized that she could, you know, kind of get what she wanted by being that way. You know, she, and then she ends up 3 years later and she's pregnant. And, when did this whole, you know, this whole crime spree, how did we go from a pregnant 14-year-old, which is not uncommon these days,
mm-hmm.
to, you know, a woman and, you know, soon to be woman going down the road of the very infamous, one of the most infamous serial killers. That's a female. How did this happen?
Well, her grandfather kicked her out when she was 15 because prior to that, her grandmother had passed away due to liver failure.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So then he kicked her out and she knew that by giving away her goods... that she could make money, so she started prostituting and she was living in the woods.
And how and so. She was what,
15?
15, 16, yeah. 15 years old at that time, living in the woods, and that's kind of started her, like, hitchhiking, vagabond type, you know, lifestyle.
Thieving, I mean, like, for the span of time, because she went from Michigan to L.A.
Right.
And, during that span of time, I mean, she had gotten in trouble for...
Is that right around the time of the armed robbery?
Yeah, yeah. But before that, she would get in trouble. She stole vehicles and stuff like that. And then she, got busted for armed robbery. And after she got out of there, that's when she met...
Tyree.
Tyree.
That was her lesbian lover.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because she did a little stint in prison for that armed robbery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she said she was, always had her Bible and would always complain that there were all these lesbians around her. And she couldn't wait to get out to go see her boyfriend.
Yeah.
So she meets Tyree,
mm-hmm.
okay, and they kind of start hitting it off. She stated, I think, on a couple occasions that getting in a relationship with a male, what was always going to be, you know, always going to turn bad, always going to be hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't going to be any love there. Wasn't going to be the type of relationship that she would expect from the opposite sex.
Right.
So that's kind of what you know, is said to have. She kind of went the other way.
Right.
And she found someone in Tyree that gave her that love that she had, you know, looked for in men prior, didn't find it. Because she was very, very much, I think her adopted sister said, she was very much disrespected by the neighborhood boys.
Right.
I mean, she was treated like a piece of fucking trash. And she was kind of acting that way.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of those things where, you know, she was asking for it. And being that promiscuous. But anyway, she, they get together and they start living this vagabond. Once they met, it said that they were just pretty much inseparable.
Mm-hmm.
And, they lived this little, you know, vagabond life, you know, staying at friends, you know, the rooms in their house or, you know, motels and whatnot. And, well, how did they pay for this? Neither one of them, Jody, neither one of them had a job.
Right.
Well,
Eileen did.
Eileen had a job. Yes, yeah. She did.
She was still prostituting. She tried to get out of it for a little while.
She did, yeah.
And tried to look for employment, but pretty much got laughed at because she had no experience.
Yeah, she had no. I mean, she lived there, you know, the past, you know, who knows how many years, you know, well, since she was about 15.
Mm-hmm. Since she was about 11. She was getting shit out of the boys.
Well,
at
then
11.
I'm talking about living on the road and whatnot. She didn't really have a whole lot of life experience. You know, she didn't, like a lot of us do at 15, maybe get our first job.
Right.
You know, no, she was living in the woods and, you know, living like a dirty hippie. And hooking.
Yeah.
So she didn't have, and which is probably why she didn't get a lot of returns. You know, no, she didn't have a resume. No, I can't really do much of anything.
Right,
give me a shot. You know, I'm trying to better myself. You know, and this was creating a lot of frustration because, you know, a lot of times they, you know, couldn't come up with, you know, the rent for their motel room, and they didn't have anything to eat. So that kind of threw her back into hooking, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
She got back into it, and this is where we get into the killings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's still kind of cloudy to me a little bit, you know. Does she just not want to hook in order to obtain the cash? Or, because she was a seasoned vet at this point.
Right.
Okay. So, did she not want to hook to get the cash and thought it'd be easier just to kill a motherfucker and take the cash and steal their car? You see what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? She had done the hooking for so long. So, was she just tired of that and just kind of getting revenge on, I'm sure a lot of, you know, prostitutes, you know, even today, you know, are getting beat up by Johns or their pimp,
mm-hmm.
or there's a lot of abuse that goes on. I understand that. Was she just tired of all that maybe happened in the past from her hooking, decided, you know what, I'm going to go out and pretend to hook, but I'm literally going to just, you know, start blowing these fucks away and stealing their shit?
No. That
what
it
do
was
you
just
think?
A lot easier, and she could get more money at one time. I mean, she's...
Well, that's true, too. Yeah, That's true, too. I think it was said that during that time, there was a lot of drugs and alcohol between, you know, the two little, you know, Tyree and her. Mm-hmm. So maybe that played a part. But, yeah, the easier, I don't know if I can agree with you that. I think it'd probably be easier just to, you know, do some kind of sexual deed for, you know, $10 or $20, whatever the going rate is for whatever you're doing.
But she was wanting to do everything possible to keep Tyree.
To keep from doing that?
I think just to keep Tyree. And she knew that there was a certain amount of money she was going to have to come up with. And, I mean...
Yeah, there's a whole lot.
Yeah, she was a seasoned vet, so...
She was,
I mean, she... What probably wasn't the most popular thing and probably didn't make what she
could have made if she just robbed them completely.
Right. Yeah. And then she robs them and then she's got a witness.
Right.
And she even says it in there that
yeah.
most of the reasons why she killed was she didn't want a witness. I mean, there's conflicting stories on her first kill and why
sure.
she killed him.
And let's jump into that, because that happened November 30th, 1989. 51-year-old named Richard Mallory. He was an electronics store owner in Clearwater, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And it's claimed that Eileen was picked up by this guy. And... that, you know, I guess there was some talk about, you know, a little bit of, you know, and that didn't go as it, you know, probably should have. And this is Eileen's story, by the way. And, you know, she was tied up and, you know, I think to the steering wheel or something.
Yeah.
And then she was anally
raped.
It was
to the door. Tied her to the door.
To the door. She was anally raped. I mean, just beaten. And then I think this was a time where the guy poured out, took rubbing alcohol
mm-hmm.
in eyedroppers and would put them in certain orifices, I think, of her body.
Yeah.
It was very brutal. I mean, you really feel sorry for this woman if this literally happened.
Right.
And she managed to, you know, somehow... She always carried a .22 caliber pistol in her purse. She said it was always for self-defense. She was living a hard lifestyle, a very dangerous lifestyle. And that was her means of self-defense in a case like this.
Right.
So she reaches in, reaches into her purse, pulls out the .22, boom, pops him. I don't know how many times.
It was like 12 times.
Was it 12? Let's see. Just a shot several times. Two bullets to the left lung were found to have been the cause of death, the
mm-hmm.
initial cause of death. And his, but it wasn't until the 13th of December that his body was even found. That was miles away. And so... She and we'll get to this later, but because I want to stick to that. That's just a strange, contradicting, you know, type weird first kill.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of lies and deception and just back and forth. But we'll get into that. The next one, age 43, Mr. David Spears. He was a he worked a good old construction.
Mm-hmm.
In Winter Garden on the 1st of June, 1990, his naked body was found along Florida State Road 19 in Citrus County. He had been shot 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on down the list, Charles Carskadden, age 40. 1990, he was a rodeo worker. He was a part-time rodeo worker. Yeehaw!
Jesus.
On the 6th of June, 1990, his body was found in Pasco County. He had been shot 9 times with a small caliber weapon. The reason they say that, you know, that you don't see a lot of like men going around like using a 22. They said that was always perfect for a woman to shoot. It was easy to shoot for a woman. So it wasn't uncommon, I guess, to find, you know, maybe a hooker with a 22. I don't know how common that is. All right. Peter Seams was age 65, retired merchant seaman. See what I did there? I didn't really do anything, but that was funny. Who devoted much of his time to a Christian outreach ministry. That all came to an end in June of 1990, where Seams left Jupiter, Florida, for Arkansas. But the worst trip of his life, on the 4th of July, happy Independence Day, Mr. Seams, 1990, his car was found in Orange Springs, Florida. Moore and Warnos, that'd be Tyree Moore, and Warnos were seen abandoning the car, and Warnos' palm print was found on the interior door handle.
Mm-hmm.
His body was never found. Let's see, got a few more here. Troy Burris, he was age 50. He was a sausage salesman. There are so many jokes there from Ocala. And on July 31st, 1990, not long after they ran into Mr. Seams, he was reported missing. His body was found on August 4th. In a wooded area along State Road 19. It seems to be a popular road there.
Yeah.
This one in Marion County. He was shot twice. Charles Dick Hump.
Goddamn, what is it with these names?
Man, I'm telling you. Charles and then parentheses Dick. I guess that's what he went by. But Charles Humphreys. He was 56. Retired Air Force major. On September 12th, 1990, his body was found in Marion County. Don't tell me. Along State Route 19. State Road 19? No, it does not say that. He was fully clothed and had been shot 6 times in the head and torso. And his car was found in Suwannee County. And last but certainly not least, Walter Gino Antonio, age 62. He was a trucker, security guard, and police reservist. On the 19th of November, 1990, Antonio's nearly naked body was found near a remote logging road in Dixie County. He had been shot 4 times. 5 days later, his car was found in Brevard County. So what they're doing, basically... And a lot of these poor souls that Eileen and Tyree came across, a lot of them, they state, that, you know, or at least Eileen does, that there was some kind of rape, there was physical abuse, there was self-defense. it seems a little odd. I think the one that really even stood a chance for her in any way, and it didn't hold a lot of water to begin with, was Mallory.
Mm-hmm.
But for, you know, that there was a lot of accusations, a lot of stories about, you know, her run-ins with these guys.
Right.
And a lot of them, again, had to do with rape or physical abuse. What do you think that the accuracy is as far as this? What was it? Just cold-blooded killing? Let's just go back to Mallory then real quick. I mean, how much water does that hold for Mrs. Dredds?
I don't know. I think in some aspects there may be some of them that did try to get forceful with her or not want to pay her.
As we mentioned, she was raped early.
Right.
You know, in life. So.
Or not want to pay her or stuff.
Sure.
But I do know her last victim, the one that was worked for the police department too.
The police reservist, yes, Antonio.
They were friends. Him and Eileen were. He genuinely tried to help her and... everything, and his killing was just a merciless killing.
Right,
he didn't do anything wrong against her. Yeah, I think there was relations between them too, but it was never non-consensual with him.
Right, right. There's never a rape scenario.
So, I mean, I think, and it could be one of those things where she, I mean, you can tell by watching her interviews or watching her that she's definitely mentally unstable.
Oh, yeah.
But you look at it at the fact that maybe that plays a part in it, that maybe the Mallory did do something to her. And then when she goes and tries to hook again or do whatever, she's getting those flashbacks of what happened. I mean, especially if the guy resists on paying her or says something that triggers something that was said to her at that time.
Right.
Or even stuff that happened to her in her childhood. Maybe that's playing a factor in it. Stuff that's,
that's
said by
plausible.
These guys and stuff that, I mean, you never know.
I think, too, I mean, kind of going along those lines that you were just speaking on, you know, maybe it didn't even, maybe the rape part was made up. Maybe there was a little bit of force. Maybe he was getting a little rough. But in order, maybe it didn't justify her pulling a gun out and shooting him. Maybe he started getting a little too grabby, a little too rough, and maybe that brought back, like you were saying, flashbacks, but flashbacks of not her hooking, but of her being
right.
raped as a child. So maybe, in a sense, I kind of think that maybe something kind of out of control did start to happen, but she exaggerated to the rest to justify shooting him, when actually she shot him just out of pure hatred, pure anger. She went into a rage, maybe some flashbacks, had some, you know, severe PTSD going on.
Right.
So maybe, you know, I think you might be on to something there. That's pretty good, because it got me thinking, listening to you, and yeah, I think this could be possible. I don't know how many and which ones that were claimed to, you know, had been rough or tried to rape her or whatnot of the victims we just read through, but I don't think there was any rape. I think the closest thing, like I just mentioned, was Mallory maybe got a little rough and she carried a gun, and maybe she had been roughed up, you know, before, not raped by a John, maybe roughed up, beat up a little bit or something, and, you know, PTSD sits in. But all right,
that's
anyway
true.
It's fun speculation, but who knows? She was, though, batshit crazy. And I'm not going to get into, you know, a whole bunch of, you know, her trial.
Yeah, I mean, at first she tried to claim that it was self-defense.
Oh, yeah, that was...
That she was innocent.
Yeah, but she had a public defender.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, she obviously couldn't afford, you know, any kind of good counsel.
Well, she even said, though, that she really didn't want...
What?
She even said, though, that she really didn't want a huge defense.
Well, yeah. Which is weird, anyway.
I don't know, she tried to claim that the police were...
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about some of
these theories.
The police
let her commit murder.
Some of these theories, well, we don't really have to get into too much, because we got a good way to end the show. It's about a 7-minute clip, being the last interview. And when I say the last interview, I mean the last interview before she was executed. It was, you know, done the day before she was executed by lethal injection. And that happened on October 9th. 2002.
Yep.
She was strapped in. I tried to find a little audio clip of her last words. You can read them, you know, in certain articles and whatnot. But, ooh, that cough's coming back. I'm surprised you haven't made mention of my nasally speech.
But didn't they say that her last meal was like fried chicken and french
fries?
Fried
chicken and like french fries, yeah.
Because they only gave her, what, a $20 budget or something?
A $20 budget. That's kind of funny. Here, your last meal, but we're only spending $20 on you. We just spent who knows how many millions and billions of dollars to house you. You know, I think she sat on death row for 12, 13 years, maybe longer. And, you know, we're only going to give you $20. You know what else? You know what else strikes me on? And that's the fact that they actually had, like, shrinks come in to make sure that she was mentally stable to be executed. And they said within 15 minutes, they came out and said, yes, she is, you know, I guess taking it well. What's the difference? What is the purpose of that?
I mean, because it's not like they're going to stop the execution if she's not doing
right.
Well.
It's like, no, she's a little bit depressed right now. We're not going to be able to go through with this. Sorry. Give her a... give her some lithium. We'll talk to her tomorrow. Can we get a therapist in execution chamber too, please? Very, very, very. But yes, she was executed on the 9th. And as I mentioned, she did give one last interview. And what an entertaining interview this is.
Yeah, because she was entertaining in court.
She was. She was flipping off the judge. Yeah.
She flipped off the judge. She told the courtroom that she hopes their kids get raped. And
oh yeah, yeah. See you in hell. Yeah. I'll be in heaven with our Lord Jesus Christ.
Looking down on you in hell.
And I hope your children. I think she was trying to play the crazy card there. I think she was trying to, possibly at that time, because there were times where she was trying to get out of the execution. She tried appealing all this, the death sentence. She was appealing it and blah, blah, blah. And then there came a time where she was speeding it up. Like, okay, I don't want to sit on death row any longer. Yeah. Let's speed this up.
Yeah, because it was automatic. Because of how many times she was sentenced to death, there was an automatic number of appeals that she had to go through.
Right.
That is just, they're automatic. No, I think it was like 20 appeals.
No, I mean four death sentences she got.
And I think it was 20 appeals that she had to.
Wow.
And they said that would take probably about 20 years that she would have just sat on death row.
Right.
Because she wasn't trying. I mean, it got to the point that she wasn't trying to fight them. She was like, there's really no point.
Sign the paperwork. Let's just get it done. You know, stop wasting taxpayers' money.
Yep, that's exactly what she said too.
So, I don't know, man. I think that there's no doubt that again, she was a severe wackadoo.
Yeah.
Okay. And you'll hear a lot of that in this clip we're getting ready to play, because the white coats are making their way down the hall. We know what that means, Mrs. Dredge. It's time to get the hell out of here. Talk to you good people next Saturday. Hopefully I can get this published. It is late Saturday. What is the date today? The date is the last day of August.
Yep.
The 31st. I think we got about, yep, it's still Saturday, so we got about 61 days until Halloween. Good, good times. Sweatshirt weather.
Yep.
Campfire weather. Scary movie. Well, every weather, any kind of weather is scary movie weather. But fun time of the year. Hopefully we can get some yard time.
Yeah.
Hopefully they let us out, get some yard time, get some fresh air. Play in the leaves, make snow angels in the leaves.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Mrs. Dredge.
You're welcome.
And we will see you guys, talk to you. May not see you. May see you.
May.
May. We'll talk to you next week. Don't forget, NightLivingDreads.com, NightLivingDreads on Stitcher, NightLivingDreads over there at Facebook. We'll see you on the other side.
You know, I was just wondering how you're going to be, you know, at 9:30 tomorrow morning. Are you prepared?
I'm prepared. I'm all right. I'm all right with it.
How?
I'm all right with it, but like I said, remember, let them know that I know that the cops knew who I was after Richard Mallory died. I left prints everywhere, and they covered it up and let me kill the rest of those guys to turn me into a serial killer. I know they did, because I was no professional serial killer or anything, or murderer, or whatever you want to call it, you know. I wasn't special at what I was doing.
Eileen,
I did some sloppy work, you know, and I left
prints. Have you prepared yourself for tomorrow morning?
I'm all right with it. Yeah, I'm ready to go. Hey, I was tortured at BCI. They had the intercom on in the room, and they kept lying that it wasn't on, and they were using sonic pressure on my head since 1997.
Sonic pressure.
And every time I was trying to write something, I think they had some kind of eye in the cell, I'm not sure, but every time I started writing something, it went up higher. So I'm thinking that probably had the TV rigged. The TV or the mirror, something was rigged. They got a huge satellite on the compound. After they put the huge satellite on the compound, it could have been either rigged to the TV set or the mirror or something, because the electrician, when he put the mirror on the wall, he said, doesn't that look like a computer? The back of it, and he stuck it to the wall.
And do you think, did that affect your mind, do you think?
Huh?
Did that affect your mind in some way, the sonic?
It was crushing my head, and they were using sonic pressure continually. Then when I had 3 meetings with Miss Villacorta on it, every meeting I had, she increased the pressure of the volume of the comm, increased the harassment on the floor, increased the trays being inedible, just increased every bit of my complaints and trashed all grievances. They're trying to make it look like I was crazy at all times, rig up the room with torture. If I said anything about their whole plan was to try to make it look like I was totally crazy, and so nobody would believe anything I had to say about anything, and then drive me there if they could. I suffered so bad. I was really struggling to survive. Had a lot of trays that were attempted murder and everything. I had to wash all my food off. And then one day I didn't wash my food off, and I was sick for 3 weeks, almost died.
But you're okay now.
I'm okay. God is going to be there. Jesus Christ is going to be there, all the angels and everything. And, you know, whatever's on the beyond, I think it's going to be more like Star Trek beaming me up into a space vehicle, man. Then I move on, recolonize to another planet or whatever. But it's whatever's the beyond, I know it's going to be good, because I didn't do anything as wrong as they said. I did the right thing. And I saved a lot of people's butts from getting hurt and raped and killed, too.
So are you saying that you killed in self-defense or in cold blood? Because you've changed your story. I'm just trying to
understand. What are you talking about? Changed story on what?
No, about whether it was self-defense or not.
I'm not going to say it. You know, I'm not going to get into depth about my cases, Nick. I'm on my way to the chamber. Nothing's stopping it. You can believe it or you don't have to believe it. That's up to you, man. Put a big question mark on your film.
What more is there to say about the cops? What more do you want to say about the cops?
A lot of stuff. Did you know that they were surveilling me before I killed? And then I knew it? And that it was covered up? Did you know there was helicopters dropping down from the sky, deputy sheriff, with decoys picking me up 4 or 5 months before my arrest? It was covered up?
But nonetheless,
nobody ever asked me these questions.
Whether the cops were following you or not, Eileen.
Oh, whether the cops were following me or not, Eileen, what?
Let's say the cops were following you.
Yeah.
Let's say they were following you and they did everything that you're saying they did.
Uh-huh.
Nonetheless,
yeah.
You killed 7 men.
Yes, you did.
And I'm asking you, what got you to kill the 7 men?
And I'm telling you, because the cops let me keep killing them, Nick. Don't you get it?
Not everybody is killing 7 people. So there must have been something in you that was getting you to do that.
Oh, you are lost, Nick!
So
I was a hitchhiking hooker.
Right.
Running into trouble. I'd shoot the guy if I ran into trouble. Physical trouble. The cops knew it. When the physical trouble came along, let her clean the streets. And then we'll pull her in.
But
that's
how come there was so much physical trouble? Because it was all in 1 year. 7 people in 1 year.
Oh, well.
But why not say now?
Because I'm out of retaliation for taking my life like this and getting rich off it all these years in total pathological lying. Yeah, thanks a lot. I lost my fucking life because of it. Couldn't even get a fair trial. Couldn't even get a fair investigation or nothing. Couldn't even have my appeals right. You sabotaged my ass society and the cops and the system. A raped woman got executed and was used for books and movies and shit. Ladder climbs, re-election, everything else. I got a big finger in all your faces. Thanks a lot. You're an inhumane bunch of fucking living bastards and bitches, and you're gonna get your asses nuked in the end, and pretty soon it's coming. 2019, Iraq's supposed to hit you anyhow. You're all gonna get nuked. You don't take fucking human life like this and just sabotage and rip it apart like Jesus on the cross and say thanks a lot for all the fucking money I made off of you and not care about a human being and the truth being told. Now I know what Jesus was going through. They've been trying to tell the truth and I keep getting it stepped on. Concerned about if I was raped, I'm not giving you book and movie info. I'm giving you info for investigations and stuff and that's it. We're going to have to cut this interview, Nick. I'm not going to go into any more detail. I'm leaving. I'm glad. Thanks a lot, society, for railroading my ass. Okay, let's go.
It was really pretty incredible that Eileen had just sailed through the psychiatric test the day before. It makes you wonder what you'd have to do to fail.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.